When Paul writes his letters to churches and individuals, he seldom asks anything for himself. And when he does, it's usually that his hearers pray for him. But here in his letter to Philemon, he asks his friend a big favor. And even here, it is not a request for himself, but for someone else. In verse 10, I beseech thee for my son Onesimus, whom I have begotten in my bonds. Verse 12, whom I have sent again, thou therefore receive him, that is, mine own bowels. Verse 17, if thou count me therefore a partner, receive him as myself. We probably know the background to this letter. It's a fascinating story. Philemon was probably a wealthy individual who, with his wife Apphia and their son Archippus, lived in the city of Colossae. And the church in that place met in their house. They had a house servant named Onesimus, a young man who didn't realize how privileged he was to live and work in a home like that. And he evidently stole some money, ran away, and reached the city of Rome. The lure of the big capital city and all that it had to offer a young man with some money was so powerful that he was prepared to behave like this and realize his sinful ambition. Paul was also in Rome. He was under a house arrest awaiting his appeal to Caesar to have his case heard by the emperor himself. Somehow, and we don't know all the details, do we? But things happened, and the upshot was that Onesimus visited Paul in this house arrest pending his trial. Paul could receive visitors, and Onesimus was among them. And through talking to Paul and Paul ministering to him, the young man was marvelously converted, totally changed, and became a new creature. One of those conversions so deep and thorough and real that there was no doubt that he was the Lord's. But Paul can't keep him. By now, after a little time, he'd become like a son to Paul, had Onesimus, and Paul would have loved to keep him, to have another Timothy, as it were, with him. But he belongs to another, his good friend Philemon. And so he has to send him back to his master. So he travels back to Colossae with a man called Tychicus, who is bearing a letter to the Colossians. And Onesimus is also bearing a letter, a covering letter, explaining all that happens. And as the two men reach Colossae, Tychicus hands in Colossians, and Onesimus hands in the epistle to Philemon, which we read earlier. And to help Philemon to understand all that's happened and to encourage him to be willing to receive this runaway slave and forgive him and reinstate him, to encourage Philemon to do that, Paul sets the whole event in the light of the words of verse 15. For perhaps he therefore departed for a season, that thou shouldest receive him forever. Not now as a servant, but above a servant, a brother. In other words, he encourages Philemon to see it in terms of it was meant to be. Now, this is not to justify the wrong that had happened, but to see the Lord's purpose in it. If Christ has forgiven Onesimus, Philemon can also. If God has received this young man, so must Philemon. If Onesimus is savingly changed, Philemon can be sure of a changed future for them both. And dear friends, this is a good way to look at such things, isn't it? The worst of things can yet be the best of things. For perhaps, there's the divine perhaps, such a providence that is sovereign and mysterious, perhaps he therefore departed for a season, that thou shouldest receive him forever. Perhaps all this, which humanly speaking is the least would have been expected and wanted, and everything about it was, I could have done without this, and yet perhaps it had to be in order that you might have so much more when the Lord's purposes are fulfilled. And so, dear friends, this is the wonderful thing about providence, isn't it? If you tend to look at events in life as the cup half empty, providence encourages you to look at it half full and to be positive and optimistic and to see it in the light of a God who governs all things, even such things as this. Not a God who is in the good things that take place and the devil is in the bad things and we've got to make the most of it or the best of it, but the God who is in the good things and the bad things and works them all together for the good of his people and for the good of who knows how many people, because the Lord is ever doing marvelous things. Never forget the divine perhaps, which encourages you to hope for the best. Let's see then how it was entirely justified in this case. And it can all be summed up really in the words of Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 8. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. Don't stay with the beginning. There's the end of a thing which is better. Let's see how it was true here. Let's look at the beginning then, and then we'll look at the ending. Let's look at the beginning. He therefore departed for a season. Everything about this was bad and wretched on a human level. If anyone had said to Philemon, you know, this Onesimus of yours, who's no longer with you now, he's going to end up as a Christian. And he'll be back, and you'll love him like a son. And it would have seemed absolutely impossible. Philemon may well have replied, I could have believed that that might have been possible if he'd stayed. If he'd been converted in the little assembly in my house. But for this, surely now it's all finished with. There's no hope anymore. Things have turned out so awfully that all we can expect is to hear nothing from him ever again. Ah, but you see, the Lord knows. And that which seems utterly impossible can very much be possible with God. But think how bad it was, this beginning of things. Such ingratitude here. Now, there were many Christian slaves in the city of Colossae, wasn't there? And Paul writes to them in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 22, and he has some very encouraging words for them. Now, it doesn't seem as if Onesimus was one of these slaves as such. He was more a household servant who enjoyed a better status. But these slaves, literally slaves, although translated servants here, in Colossians 3:22, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord ye shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for ye serve the Lord Christ. Now these slaves had a dreadful life. They were treated worse than animals, pets in the home. They were just chattels, just the possession of their masters. And if a slave made a mistake or didn't please the master, he would just be put to death and replaced by another. They never received any wages or any consideration. They were treated absolutely abominably. But Paul says, oh dear Christian slaves, you have another master in heaven. Ye serve the Lord Christ. Look above your cruel masters and look to your dear master in heaven, and do it for his dear sake. And that'll transform the whole experience, lift it on to another level. And of course, this is the Christian work ethic, isn't it? That many Christians work in situations where the boss is terrible, but they can look beyond the boss to their dear Lord and Master in heaven and do it for his sake. Ye serve the Lord Christ, who will give the reward. And of course, this transforms everything. The ultimate job satisfaction, doing it for him. But now, Onesimus didn't have to think about this, because Philemon would have been a good master, very humane and considerate and kind, and Onesimus would have been almost one of the family. But what a way to repay such a privilege, to behave in this fashion. Matthew Henry reminds us, we cannot expect too little from men or too much from God. But such wickedness. Here he was in verse 2 of the epistle to the Philemon, the church in thy house, that he should end up in a Christian family, that he should be present on the first day of the week at the assemblies to hear preaching, to live with Christian people, good Christian people. And yet verse 18, he's wronged his master. He owes his master. It's thought that he would have stolen money. He would have, when Philemon and Apphia and Archippus weren't around, he would have rifled their belongings and gone over things and through things and found some money and stole it and made off like a burglar. And poor Philemon and Apphia had their house defiled in this way. Not so much the amount that was taken, but the fact that it was treated in this fashion by someone who owed them so much. But you see, it was the lure of a different kind of life. And of course, when you're young and you have to buckle down to a disciplined life, working hard and doing what others tell you, the thought that if you had money to spend in the big city, what a difference that would be. How wonderful that would be. And this was too much for the young man. And so, yielding to temptation, he stole the money and absconded, and somehow made it to Rome, expecting to have a wonderful life and to do all the things he could never have done in Colossae. Now, there's nothing new in this, is there? How often this has happened in principle. How often people have burgled to fund drug addiction, stolen from others in order to feed the habit, do something that was absolutely necessary to the enjoyment of life. and the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal, and the warning that mammon is a hard master, and that if you serve the God of possessions, it'll be a hard service and unfulfilling. All this is not taken notice of. And this wickedness that Onesimus yielded to. And of course it was such a disappointment, wasn't it? Maybe this was a promising young man in Philemon's home. Archippus was converted, their son. He had a ministry at Laodicea, didn't he, afterwards? And here is Onesimus, whom they are perhaps training up, hoping to see converted in the assembly, praying for, noticing little signs, perhaps, of interest, and noticing that a changed attitude might indicate something's taking place in his heart. Listening? Is he praying now? Is the Lord working conviction? Is Christ becoming real to him? And then the next minute, they hear he's gone with their money. What disappointment. What a strange thing that their own son Archippus can be converted. And Onesimus, who perhaps ought to feel more gratitude, is hardened. The same sun melts the wax, hardens the clay. Younger ones, if you have a Christian mum and dad, be so thankful for that. But be warned, because the same gospel that can save your brother and sister can harden your heart. And it doesn't follow automatically that you will be saved. And if you begin to harden your heart against the gospel, you never know where you may end up, what you may end up doing. And there are some sons and daughters of Christian homes, when they've got to teenage years, they've done things that have broken their parents' hearts and brought great grief and shame upon the family. And I tell you, when you start resisting the gospel, and when you start hankering for the world, and when you are drawn by the lure of the world and worldly friends, you never know where that may stop, because you are not under your own control. You're under the control of another, the spirit of the age that worketh in the children of disobedience. And you never know where it might lead you and drive you and what you may do. Sin is not something that you can just pick up and then put down at will. Sin is something that takes you over. Jesus said, "Whosoever committeth sin is the slave of sin." And maybe Onesimus thought he could just have a little bit here and a little bit there, but found in fact that he had to steal, run away, give himself to sins in Rome, which are not mentioned and which we perhaps wouldn't want to mention. And he found in fact that he was under the control of something, not in control. And this beginning, leading Onesimus to whatever it was a very grievous thing. Philemon and Apphia probably were realistic enough to imagine what the young man was doing, and were grieved and heavy-hearted. He departed for a season. How long? They didn't hear anything about him. How long? Nothing. How long they prayed. How long they had to leave it with the Lord. How long they had to comfort themselves with God's promises. We don't know. But what a beginning. Let's look secondly at the ending. Perhaps he therefore departed for a season that thou shouldest receive him forever. And you see, there is a sense in which he had to leave. Because God's purpose was not for him to be converted in the home of Philemon, to be converted through the instrumentality of Paul. And so he had to leave Colossae and go to Rome. How did he leave Colossae to go to Rome? It was by sinning. It was by the devil driving him. It was by the spirit of the age taking him over. So that the man gave himself to those sinful things in order that he might meet Paul in that very place. This is the thrilling thing about the sovereignty of God, isn't it? And the overruling providence that's higher than sinful actions, that's higher than our heart's desires when they're desiring wickedness, higher than what the devil thinks he's getting away with and succeeding in. Ah, he had to leave. He departed for a season that thou shouldest receive him forever. There was a needs be in this. It's sad when a young man of a Christian home grows up unconverted and then quits the household, glad to get away from the restrictions and the intolerable limitations of a mum and dad who are boring and who are so strict, and oh, to be free, and oh, to enjoy the world and have worldly friends and do what they're doing. It is sad. Parents grieve greatly over that. But Philemon and Apphia couldn't have known at that time that it had to be. It was God's purpose. And you see, the remarkable thing was that going to Rome was what was the answer to their prayers. You hear sometimes, don't you, in people giving their testimonies, I grew up in a good Christian home, but I didn't appreciate what I had. Mum and Dad, I know, prayed for me, and they reared me in the scriptures. I remember Mum sitting in front of me with tears in her eyes, pleading with me that I might yield to Christ and be saved and not go to hell. I remember my dad very tenderly saying, son, I don't want to be in heaven and for you to be in hell and to look at me from hell and see me in heaven like that rich man in Luke 16. I want us all to go to heaven together. Seek the Lord. Value your soul. Pray. And realize you're a sinner. And take the gospel seriously. Yes, he did all that. They did all that. And I didn't take any notice. And my heart was hard. And what I put my parents through. And when I think how I endangered my immortal soul. What peril I was in. And I didn't realize it. I could have died easily. And gone straight to hell. In the face of my parents' prayers and entreaties. But you know, I went abroad, joined the army, or got a job abroad through some other reason, and I met a Christian there. And you know, I was converted there. And the Lord had to take me overseas, thousands of miles away, in order for me to be saved. Isn't that remarkable? Sometimes it's like that. Perhaps he therefore departed for a season that thou shouldest receive him forever. But the remarkable thing here, dear friends, is this. The Lord worked at both ends of the chain, didn't he? Because Paul was there in Rome. Onesimus was here in Colossae. And both had to come together. And so it was not Paul coming to Colossae, it was Onesimus going to Rome. But he made sure it happened. And the trouble the Lord took over this Now you think of what lay behind Paul going to Rome. That was a tremendous thing, wasn't it? It all began in Acts 21. The Jews raised a great outcry and they accused Paul of something that was false, and there was a great riot and the Jews tried to lynch Paul. The Romans intervened and got Paul out of their hands and put him in custody and wanted to know what the matter was, and they couldn't get at the truth of what all this trouble was about. And so Paul was brought before Felix the governor, and then afterwards Festus the governor, and then Agrippa, and eventually he appealed to Caesar, and so he was sent to Rome. On the way he was shipwrecked, and at the end of a perilous voyage he finally gets to Rome under house arrest there. Why did all that happen? One reason was because Onesimus was going to go to Rome. And he was going to meet Paul there. All this for one of God's elect. And you see the trouble God goes to? In order that one elect vessel is reached with the gospel. And that's why in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 10, we read this: "Therefore, says Paul, I endure all things for the elect's sakes, that they may also obtain the salvation which is in Christ Jesus with eternal glory." Everything that happens to me, it's for the elect, in order that they might have this crowning blessing at the set time and place. They might be brought out by God's grace and obtain the salvation. And so Paul is in Rome. And this is the way that it happened. Now, what led to Onesimus seeking Paul out in Rome? We don't know. But we can conjecture, can't we? Like the prodigal son, the money must have run out. And with it, his friends left him. And he was alone, penniless. Sank into terrible despair, maybe. And had to try and get some money somehow to eat some food. Ended up almost like a beggar. He began to realize what a fool he'd been. Began to realize that the world is only a friend to you while you can give it something. But when you've got nothing more to give, it'll walk out on you. And the promises of the world are empty promises. And sin lets you down. And sin fails you. And sin becomes a great disappointment. And maybe someone passing by mentioning Paul the prisoner, waiting for his appeal in such and such a place. Oh, and he can receive visitors, and he does get visitors. You know, the Jews go back and forth, and he teaches them the things about Jesus Christ and the kingdom of God. And our Christian friends visit him freely. They take the trouble to come from various churches, and they actually travel to Rome and visit Paul and give him gifts, like the Philippians and things, and pray with him, and he's much refreshed by that, and then they go back again. He has a regular ministry there, one-to-one. And Onesimus thinks, would he receive me? And surely the Spirit of God assures him that he will. And he's already now beginning to be softened. And he begins perhaps to pray in his trouble. And it begins to come home to him, all his sin and his sinning, and God's anger and wrath, and fearing to die, and fearing as to where his soul will go, the other side of death. Knowing that the one thing needful now is, someone tell me what I've been listening to these years but have not taken any notice of, and I still don't understand how I can be saved, how I can perhaps be restored, if there can be a future for me. I'll go and see Paul. And he goes to see Paul. And Paul, this great missionary, this great famous leader of the churches, and Onesimus ever so nervous perhaps and ashamed, but from the first sight of the dear apostle, he can see he's like a father. And he welcomes him, bids him sit down, listens to his story, says, I know Onesimus. I've never been to the church at Colossae, but I know about it. And I'm with them in spirit, joying and beholding their order very often on the Sabbath day. Onesimus, you've been a privileged young man. And he pours it all out, and Paul listens very lovingly and patiently. And then Paul preaches to him the gospel. And isn't it a strange thing that good preachers will have been at Colossae in that home, preaching their hearts out. Onesimus, one of the hearers, and no effect at all. But now, one man, Paul, lovingly unfolds the old story of Jesus and his love, and the precious blood that can cleanse him from all sin, and the power of the Spirit that can form in him a new heart and make him a new creature. Now, Onesimus is wide-eyed and open-eared. His heart is being opened. And there is the working of the Spirit that all culminates in poor Onesimus, probably as he's listening to this, bowing lower and lower and lower, his head in his hands, under conviction. And as Paul speaks about Christ and the wonderful love of this dear Redeemer, and the promise of the gospel, that whosoever believeth in him shall not come into condemnation, but shall have everlasting life, and all that, he raises his head up, and he's full of hope and assurance, and he prays with the apostle and confesses his sin and repents with all his heart. And he believes on the Lord Jesus Christ, and he is saved, and he knows it. And you know, there are conversions, aren't there, where someone prays the sinner's prayer, as it were, God be merciful to me, a sinner. And that instant, they know that they've been heard. And they have the blessed assurance, Jesus is mine, and all my sins are gone, and the burden has been lifted, and I'm free. And God is my heavenly Father. And everything's changed. From darkness to light. From the power of Satan unto God. To receive the forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among all them that are sanctified. And he's a new young man. And it's one of those situations where, as it were, they fall in love. From the very beginning, this father figure and this young man like a son. And Paul could have wished he could have held on to Onesimus. Never seen for a long time such a transformation so soon. And such a promising young man now. But of course, conversion doesn't change the past. And if there are things that belong to one's sinful past that have happened, the Lord making all things new, that's concerning us. But there might have to be restitution and things put right. And of course, Paul realizes this. It's a Christian principle, isn't it? Onesimus, you've got to go back to your master. You've got to say sorry. You've got to make everything right again. And you've got to submit to him. And now be a better servant than you've ever been before. And you prove the reality of your conversion by being the best servant that Philemon has. Will you do that? Now, if he hadn't been genuinely converted, he wouldn't have been willing to, would he? But one of the evidences that he was really saved was that he was more than willing. But he may have said, but Paul, how can I expect that my master will forgive me and reinstate me and ever trust me again for the future? And so Paul says, I'll write a letter. See, it's all the inspiration of the Spirit, isn't it? Bringing the New Testament into being. And yet it's human as well. A wonderful coming together of divine sovereignty and human agency. I'll write a letter that you can take to your master. And I believe he will do this. He'll do it for my sake, as well as for your sake. And so there is the letter that he comes back with and that he reads. And the interesting thing is, in verse 11 there, which in time past was to thee unprofitable, but now profitable to thee and to me. And the word, the name Onesimus means profitable. He hadn't lived up to his name before, but now he can, because he's converted. And dear friends, it teaches us that we never know what potential is locked up in an unconverted person. And only when they're converted does that potential come forth. And I've said this many times. No one ever knows what they're capable of being until they're born again. Because without the new birth, we do not know and we cannot realize everything that we are as human beings. We're dead in trespasses and sins, alienated from the life of God. And we're stunted and we're limited and we haven't a fraction of the ability and the gifts and the potential that God has built into us. None of that can come forth. When we're born again, then it is that we begin to live in the sight of God. We have the life of God in our souls, and everything that he's built into us can then blossom and flourish. I've seen instances of conversion and the whole personality blossoms. They become different people. They realize what they could can be. It's marvelous, the grace of God, isn't it? And this Onesimus, who was a sullen character, probably surly and lazy and not doing his duty properly and not grateful and so on, now the young man is totally changed. He was unprofitable and now profitable. He would have been such as Paul would have been glad to hold on to as a young fellow worker. Leave alone Philemon gain now as a transformed servant. And so, being converted, it comes forth to his glory. And you see, young people, as you're growing up, you don't know what God has put into you and what potential you have as boys and girls, young men, young women. If you're converted, you'll find out. You'll find out. If someone had said to my mother when I was the age of some of you youngsters now, Johnny, that's what they used to call me at home, Johnny will one day be a minister and a preacher. No, she would have said. He's so nervous. He's so reserved. When I used to take him to school, his infant school, and then pick him up at the end of the day, he'd be picking at his little jumper. He was so frightened and nervous, he couldn't speak to anyone, even one-to-one, leave alone in public. Yes, well, God has proved my mother wrong. Who would have known if I had stayed unregenerate? Of course, I wouldn't have been a minister. And I don't know what I'd have been. Not a fraction of what God has enabled me to be. The grace of God. Isn't it a desirable thing to be a Christian? Isn't it a good reason to seek the Lord? Because you find life, and that more abundant as a Christian. And this Onesimus, who knows what's going to happen to him, Who knows how he's going to be in the future? He's going to serve his generation. He's named in the New Testament. He's highly esteemed by no less than the Apostle Paul. And now he's shining in heaven, having lived a life well worth the living, and having fulfilled his whole potential by the grace of God. I pity any unconverted person for this reason. You've never lived. You don't know what life is. You don't know what you could do. Because you've never known Christ. You're ungodly. You're stunted. You're limited. You're nothing compared to what God can make you. Isn't that a reason to seek the Lord while he may be found? Call upon him while he is yet near? The salvation of the soul is the most important thing. To live to God's glory, of course. But even on this level, in the past unprofitable, now profitable to thee and to me. Now as we draw to a close, this is the ending, that thou shouldest receive him forever. Not now a servant, above a servant, a brother, beloved. Now Paul encourages Philemon to see this in retrospect, in the past. Easier to be wise in retrospect, isn't it? To see what's happened and draw lessons from it. If we are still at the beginning of something, if the departure has happened, if the sad and wretched event has taken place, we can't see any hope, then we're encouraged to see this prospectively, aren't we? See it in terms of departing for a season, that you should receive the blessing forever. God's fruition of his purposes and what is involved. Remember how it was with Joseph? Ye meant it unto evil, God meant it unto good. You can look back and see it now. But Joseph was encouraged to see it even while the worst was happening, because he knew it was the fulfillment of his dreams and the overriding purposes of God. Believe that he is going to do something. There's the beginning, but better is the end of a thing than the beginning thereof. Trust in God and hope in him, that thou mightest receive him forever. That word receive means paid in full. Your complete reward, Philemon, for what you've gone through. God has recompensed you for all he's put you through. He's given you this man back again, and all the blessing now of a future together. So transformed. Now have faith in God, and believe that whatever sorrow, disappointment, suffering there might be, God will pay you in full for it. You'll receive so much more as a result. The time may not be long, departing for a season, that thou mightest receive him forever. What has happened now, just for a while, but oh, what's going to be? Trust him for it. Who knows what it'll be? But you see, it's not that the worst has happened and that's it. End of story. The worst may have happened, but God's best may be just round the corner. What it's going to lead to. What the Lord's going to do in the end, which is better than the beginning. It might even be tomorrow. There can be the long night of weeping. Weeping may endure for a night, says the psalm, but joy cometh in the morning. Maybe tomorrow your day will come. Perhaps, it's a good perhaps, isn't it? It's a grand perhaps. It's a perhaps that takes into account the fact that God rules the world, and that God rules your little world and my little world as well. and that God takes human sin and our sorrow and wonderfully mixes it all together to give us the gift and the prize at the end, received forever. May God honour our faith and our hope and glorify his name. Amen.